Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Derek Dyson.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Derek Dyson to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. Michael Edgley on the bench, travelling again this week, but first edition news with Wilton van Denderen shortly. Now, first up, after the shock of winning the A-League men's grand final last year, the Central Coast Mariners have backed it up with a properly consistent season this year, threatening for the title with fellow unexpected frontrunner, the Wellington Phoenix. How's it all come together under the gaffer Mark Jackson? We'll talk to him directly to find out. Then, since Ange Postecoglou left the Scottish Premiership, our eye has not been as firmly focused on that competition. But of course, with a stack of Australians, the most competitive competition in a while, and big expectations for the national side around the coming Euros, there's plenty to talk about. So we'll do just that with our old mate from The Athletic, Jordan Campbell. Derek, a huge week. Never any shortage of topics to talk about. You must have been very happy with the way that your mob did in the Champions League. I know we're going to talk about that, but they wobbled for a little bit, but they found their legs and got the job done against Porto.
It was actually a very relaxing weekend, Rob, a rare weekend of domestic football where Arsenal aren't playing. So it was good to kick back, yes, in the afterglow of that result against Porto and watch a smattering of Premier League football and a smattering of very high-caliber FA Cup stuff, some other dramatic stuff from around Europe and, of course, back here in Australia too. So, yeah, just another great week of sport.
It was, Willem. You're over there watching it. You've been to a few games over the past couple of months. Did you get to anything over the weekend, Matt, or was it all on the tube for you?
No, all in the box, Rob, for the weekend just gone. St. Paddy's Day, obviously a pretty big thing in Ireland, of course, but to an extent, Europe and particularly Amsterdam is a tourist city as well. So plenty of fun had and plenty of football consumed as always. Praise first up this week for the young Matildas. They've defeated South Korea 1-0 to finish third at the Under-20 Asian Cup. That equals their previous best finish of 2006. Australia had earlier been pretty comprehensively beaten by Japan 5-1 in the semi-final. But Lara Gooch's goal in the third place playoff meant they exited the tournament with 4 wins from 5. So I now look ahead to the Under-20 Women's World Cup in Colombia, which kicks off at the end of August this year. Here's a little bit of Young Matildas coach Leah Blaney speaking on the 9-1 scoreline that saw them miss the 2019 World Cup and how she and the group have grown until now.
I never wanted to experience that feeling again. And from that day moving forward, there was just a commitment to making sure that we became the best versions of ourselves as a group, and we learned from those experiences and took them forward. And I've been waiting now for 3 years for that. They bounce back like the resilient young women they are. You know, they're a strong group. We took learnings from the Japan game into this match. Overall, our performance and the quality of our play was at a very good level today as well. And I think the later stages of the game, we set the task of remaining disciplined and executing our game plan. And today we saw that for 90 minutes.
And further good news for Australian football and football broadly, Australia looks all but set to host the 2026 Women's Asian Cup following the endorsement of the AFC Women's Football Committee last week. The decision won't be ratified until the committee's next meeting in May, but with no other nations bidding after the withdrawal of Saudi Arabia and Uzbekistan, it seems a relatively sure thing. Australia have hosted the Asian Cup once before, Rob, in Adelaide in 2006, and the 2010 victory remains the Matildas' only major silverware. It's going to be a very different event 20 years on, should it be ratified, from that 2006 tournament, which saw games played at Hindmarsh and Marden Stadium, and that was it.
Do you think I'm being cynical to suggest that there might have been a little payoff for Australia stepping back from the World Cup bid and leaving it all for Saudi Arabia? Maybe a little deal on the side table there that said, look, we'll back off from yours if you back off from ours?
I think it's probably happened, but the interesting thing to come is, will that deal also tie in with the Club World Cup, which I think Australia might be in the running for?
We'll watch that space with interest.
Another space we were watching over the past week was over in Auckland. Their new A-League side is going to be known as Auckland FC, with owner Bill Foley's preferred name of the Black Knights to be used as nickname only. The club's Inter Milan-style kit has already made headlines, with a pitch invader donning the strip as he interrupted Wellington's win over Sydney FC. Inaugural manager Steve Corica has stated that player signings aren't going to be announced until June, with the side to enter the league from next season. Derek, you've had a glance at the kit and a glance at the logo. Let's get a rating out of... out of 5 or out of 10, however you want to do it, for each if possible. Firstly, the kit.
Oh, out of 10, I reckon a strong 9. A very, very distinctive kit. It's not. Is it going to clash with anyone? Maybe the Melbourne Victory. They're going to have an away kit for that fixture. But yeah, I'm all up for homage to iconic European kits, that's for sure.
And the logo, Rob?
Yeah, look, I'm probably more interested in the discussion that was going on around the naming of the side after the heritage of the owner and the way that he chose them. You weren't that happy about it, were you, Willem? To me, I didn't really feel the sort of the visceral emotional reaction that you did.
There was nothing specifically wrong with the term Black Knights, but it needs to be viewed as a club, not a license. And in time, I mean, this gentleman's 79 years old, but it doesn't really matter how old anyone or any private owner is. You'd hope that this would pass on to another owner in future, just through the long-term nature of football. So for him to sort of have it as a term attached to his personal life, his history, I think it needs to be bigger than that.
But doesn't it get lost in the mists of time? I was listening to you guys talking on Stoppage Time last week about, I think, was it Lincoln City, the Imps, and the fact that they got their name from the devil-shaped gargoyle carvings inside the cathedral. So, you know, maybe that might have been controversial back then, that it was related to a church. So, you know, doesn't time heal all wounds?
Sure. What about the logo? I think it's boring as all hell.
Yeah, it's boring. I just was.
It looks a little bit like the Inter Miami logo. Like they've just taken it and just changed the colour from pink to blue. By the looks of it.
Yeah, I could have had a bit more fun with that. Abroad, the Champions League quarterfinal draw has pitted 14-time champions Real against holders Manchester City, while PSG will have to defeat Barcelona if they're to end their wait for a maiden title. Arsenal versus Bayern Munich and Atletico Madrid against Borussia Dortmund are the other two ties, meaning all 8 sides remaining are former finalists. Meanwhile, in the FA Cup, Manchester United won a 4-3 thriller over Liverpool to advance to the Final Four. Some brilliant games throughout the round, which we will give the full treatment in Stoppage Time. But pick the eyes out of the Champions League for me, Derek. A couple of penalty shootouts. How did you go across the midweek fixtures?
I thought it was a good round of fixtures. Look, obviously the drama was with Arsenal, obviously, in their shootout. Atletico Madrid were... there was some drama there too. Everyone else, I think, was relatively comfortable. Jadon Sancho, of course, got a winner for Dortmund. So that kind of lit up proceedings there. Obviously, we knew Bayern had got through. Barcelona have had a very patchy season so far, got themselves through. Edge's favourite, Mbappe, we'll be looking at. Doing something great with this Paris team, but before he leaves, but I like the look of the quarterfinals. You know, Real Madrid versus City is the star game. Arguably, I'd say the number one, number two seeds, depending on which way you look at it. So one of them are going to go out. It's probably a game that may be suited later in the tournament, but I think it's open. Everywhere else it is absolutely open. I think everyone will fancy going through. Arsenal, of course, will be looking for revenge against Bayern. You know, it goes back to when I was back in the UK watching Arsenal. I was there when we lost 10-2 on aggregate to Bayern. It was humiliating stuff. And of course, the narrative of Harry Kane returning to Emirates Stadium, I'm sure he'll get a fantastic welcome. Atletico Madrid and Dortmund, you know, pick a winner there. Paris and Barcelona, you know, highly skilled teams with massive flaws, pick a winner there. So look, I think these quarterfinals look pretty tasty, Willem.
Socceroos and Matilda Central for the Green and Gold Army. Packages are now available for the Paris Olympics this July, and you'd be mad not to be there. The Matildas are saddling up, hopefully the Ollie Roos as well. Head to ggatravel.com.au. Aidan Rustich, Josh Nisbet, and Adam Taggart headline Graham Arnold's 25-man squad for this week's two World Cup qualifiers against Lebanon. Rustich is back for the first time since the 2022 World Cup. Taggart makes it five strikers in the squad after Arnie retained his Asian Cup quintet. And Nisbet, as we've been speaking about in previous weeks, has earned his first call-up after former teammate Lewis Miller withdrew with injury. Arnie also spoke in his presser on the non-selection of Alessandro Cercatti or Christian Volpato in either the Socceroos or the Olleroos squads this week.
I spoke to the kid, and I think it's one thing a lot of people need to understand. The pressure the kids get put under from their clubs overseas is to play for Australia is a lot. Alessandro and even Christian Volpato, exactly the same. They just want to focus on their club careers at this moment in time. I do believe that both of them, Alessandro especially, will play for Australia, and I do believe Christian will want to play for Australia. It's just at the moment, the timing's probably not right for them, as they're, you know, especially with Alessandro, they're going for promotion with Parma to get up in the Serie A. But overall, you know, I think we've got the cover for those players at the moment, and the Socceroos will, in the future, benefit from those type of things.
Christian Volpato, since Arnie spoke, there has been called up to the Italian underage squad, which is a little bit of a concern from our point of view. On the pitch, Harry Kewell has led Yokohama to the semi-finals of the Asian Champions League, 3-1 on aggregate over Shandong Taishan. They're up against Ulsan Hyundai in the semis from April 17. And to close, in the English Women's Super League, Mary Fowler started and scored for Man City in their 10th successive league win, 4-1 over Brighton. But our Arsenal trio of Ford, Catley and Cooney Cross, Rob, all partook in a loss to Chelsea that has them 6 points adrift of the lead.
Yeah, well, it's just great that we're talking about their names in the top flight. And again, we've discussed this a few times that we, I think, took it for granted back in the early 2000s when we had that golden generation of men that ultimately broke through in the 2006 World Cup and did all those heroic things back in Germany. We've got to really soak up the fact that this Matilda side is a generational squad, and hopefully Will Blaney's bringing through the next generation. But the ones that we've got right now, these are our superstars, and they're doing brilliant things over there. So whether they're, you know, playing a full 90 minutes or coming on off the bench and doing their best, it doesn't matter. We've got a stack of them there, and it's good for Australian women's football in particular. Okay, after the break, we are going to head up to the central coast of New South Wales, one of my favourite parts of the world. As a kid, my family used to spend all of our holidays up around the central coast, the Entrance and Terrigal, Baddo Bay, Booker Bay. What a great place that is. Beautiful, beautiful location. But right now, they've got a gaffer, Mark Jackson, who's come from MK Dons. He's from the north of England, and he's absolutely loving it from all accounts. We've been trying to get him on for a little while now, and he's going to join us, have a chat about how he's settling in, how the Asian Champions League process is going there in the hunt for a treble themselves. That's next. Mark Jackson from the Central Coast Mariners on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And any football fan last year, apart from, of course, Melbourne City fans, that is, would have enjoyed the rise of the Central Coast Mariners. They were the little club that could when the A-League first started. And when Nick Montgomery and a number of his stars left the club following that drought-breaking championship last season, you know, a lot of people on the coast and other football supporters around the country might have been resigned to a slide back down the table. Well, that hasn't happened. As we round the final stretch this season, his successor, Mark Jacko Jackson, is the club in the mix for a rare treble at the pointy end of the A-League ladder and into the final four of the AFC Cup. Jacko, welcome to Box to Box for the first time.
Cheers, pleasure to be here. Am I nicking someone's surname there? Because I've heard there's another Mark Jacko Jackson in Australia. So,
well, it's funny. I was actually saying that before, but he was an absolute card-carrying lunatic AFL player, Jacko. So, as long as you don't just check it out YouTube, mate. I don't think you'll qualify as quite the Jacko, but no, he's a funny character, mate. But well, I guess you know there was a few antics up in India last week. We don't need to sort of go into all the detail of that. But, you know, it was a 4-0 lead you took to Odisha, nil all result, saw you through comfortably. Yeah, a little bit of bad blood at half time, but the trip overall, you'd have to say it was a huge success.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was a real difficult tie, all in all. You know, people might look at the first leg and say, yeah, you're 4-0 up. But we were against a kind of formidable opposition. You know, there was at the time of the first leg, they were sitting top of the Indian Super League. I think they've just dropped off now because of teams had games in hand. But to get the home result against such a team who's been doing so well in their domestic league, and then go to India and deal with, you know, coming off the back of the MacArthur game on the Sunday, travelling early Monday morning, dealing with the travel, which was challenging, but also the weather and things like that. For us to put in a performance, which we did, and I know it's probably, you know, the nil-nil people see us scoring goals in the first leg, but I think we limited them to zero shots. I think they had one shot on target, but that was called offside. So they had zero attempts, an opponent's home ground and under their conditions and with all the travel. It was a tremendous effort from the players, and also the staff who helped prepare the players and kind of recover the players in between and organise the travel and things like that. So it was a massive, massive team effort, and the players did fantastic.
And I guess it speaks to the rise of football around the world. I mean, we watched it in the World Cup in Qatar, where nations that were not expected to do particularly well did well. It's been Saudi Arabia beating Argentina, the ultimate champions. We saw the African Cup of Nations recently, some of the real minnows having incredible runs. I mean, you're born and bred in Leeds. Your football career as a professional was entirely in England. Your most recent gig was at MK Dons. One minute you're in India, next minute you're travelling to Kyrgyzstan to play at a cant. Football takes you to some amazing places, doesn't it?
It's fantastic. For me as a manager at the minute, I'm loving it. I'm loving the experience we're getting. Everybody keeps talking about, you have to cope with this travel and this travel, and you have to go here and the schedule, and it's just positivity for me. For me as a coach, and I'm the same with my staff, Danny and Andres, and the staff who came across with me. They're loving it, and what the good thing is that the players are embracing it. And I keep saying all the time that, you know, players like to play football games. You know, as much as we've got a great group who have a fantastic attitude to training, you know, players want to play. So the more games, the better for us. Yes, we have to navigate the travel and stuff like that, but like I said, we've got the staff who help recover the players and plan for the players to travel and stuff like that to make it as smooth as possible. And when you've got all those pieces of jigsaw kind of working in unison and fitting together, then, you know, you've got a recipe for success. And that's what we feel we're having at the minute. We know we've got a long way to go, and we know it's going to be a really, really tough leg when we have to travel away again. But again, we've felt it. We've dealt with it before, and we kind of know where we need to tweak things and be ready. So we'll ensure that we're fully prepared for this next AFC Cup away leg. And, you know, we'll go out there with everything and everything in place, and hopefully we can progress again.
Keen to ask you about a couple of those players, Mark. Josh Nisbet is the man of the moment in Australian football for now. He's made the Socceroos squad for the first time this week, and he's taken his game to a new level. It can't be denied. He's always been a solid citizen through the early part of his career, but for mine, I think particularly his ability to get his head up and play the ball through the lines to his strikers is unparalleled in the A-League at the minute. So what have you seen in him during your 10 or so months at the club?
Well, first and foremost, he's a really, really hungry young man who wants to better himself and get better and learn and play well. And when you've got that within a player, you know, that willingness to take on board information from myself and Danny and the other coaches who work with him, when you've got a player who wants to do that, then, you know, like I said before, you've got a recipe for success. And given the talent he's got as well, and the physical capabilities he has, which are really, really high, with the technical attributes as well, with his tactical understanding. I think post-game once I talked about him playing any position because of his knowledge of the game and his understanding of the game. And, you know, that's true of Nizzy at the minute. And, you know, he's shining in the positions we've put him in and the system we play. So he's really, really shining with that. But listen, it's all down to him. It's all down to him and his attitude and willingness to learn and embrace things and embrace the change, which happened when Monty and Serge left, because there was a lot of doubt in people's minds and things like that. But he's really, really embraced what we want to try and achieve. And, you know, for him to get the call up is you know, testament to his hard work and dedication, not only this season but over his time as a footballer at the Central Coast Mariners. So we're really, really pleased for him, really delighted for him as a club, as a staff, and his teammates were made up when we announced it. I think he had an interview with the Socceroos media, and he mentioned how we announced it, and it was fantastic, and you know, all his teammates were made up for him. So yeah, it's really, really pleasing for him.
Nice. You've also had a huge lift out of one of your imports, Michael Docker, over the past 6 weeks or so. He took a little bit to settle, but he's been immense in the past, yeah, as I say, the last 6 weeks to 2 months. Goals, assists, he wants the responsibility from the penalty spot, playing multiple positions across the back line. What is it about this guy behind the scenes that makes him tick?
Yeah, I mean, we knew that Mikel was a great player. And like I said, I've been told here when people do come across, and you know, I even felt it myself as a manager, it takes a little bit of time to settle. You know, you move into a different country, a different type of football, different environment, you know, settling into that new environment as well. I think it just took him a little bit of time. But again, we always saw the performances within him, you know, and we're really, really blessed here that we have. You know, I know he's played different positions, but ultimately he came as a right back, and we've got Storm Rue as well. We've got two fantastic, high quality right backs performing and battling out for that position. And he got to a stage where we thought about pushing him forward a little bit. And to be fair, Storm and Docker have been a great partnership on that right hand side. So, you know, it's something we knew what was coming with the player. We could see it coming. We could see that potential within him. And I think he's just, you know, without singling anybody out, these individuals are really, really benefiting from the environment around the team and the performances of the team as a whole. You know, everybody's really thriving at the minute, and you know, the team performance and the team shining at the minute is allowing the individuals to shine as well. So, you know, long may that continue. But yeah, he's just one of a number of players who have been, you know, performing at a really, really high level of late.
Domestically, after your trip to India, you've just had the weekend off and you've watched Wellington move back to the top of the table, although you do have the all-important game in hand. And in a fortnight's time after the international break, you're going to meet Sydney FC, which will be an all-eyes-on clash. They are the form team outside of the top two, I think it's fair to say. And there's been a lot of discussion by some other of your colleagues, fellow managers in the league, of this new press under Talay and David Zrilic as well, who's been getting some credit. So what are you expecting as you line up to play the Sky Blues?
Yeah, I mean, they come out of the blocks against us when we played them at home, and they put the game to bed, so to speak, within 20 minutes. And, you know, we didn't deal with that well. And you know, we've learned a lot from that. But I know a lot of people talking about this kind of Red Bull style and this Red Bull type of press. You know, I've been privileged enough to work alongside Jesse Marsh at Leeds, who had worked in the Red Bull system. So you know, I know a lot about the type of press. Obviously, there's different variations to it, and people talk about one style. But listen, there's a high energy about how they play and how they get after the game, which is, you know, when they get it right, it can be really, really dangerous. And if you're not on your game, or you know, you get wobbled by it, then you can get punished. And you know, that happened to us, you know, in that home game. So you know, we've got a lot of work to do in the lead up to that Sydney game to prepare for it. We know what they're going to bring. I doubt whether they'll change it. And like you said, outside of the top two, I think they're a team who are in really, really good form. I know they lost against Wellington, but again, the showed attributes of that when I was watching it, that they can be a really, really dangerous team, not just on the press, because I think if you just talk about a team's press, that does a disservice to how they play with the ball as well. And I think they've got some really, really quality players who can be dangerous. So listen, we're going to have to prepare like we do every game, to the best of our ability. We have to be mindful of things coming up, and we're going to really utilise that week in the lead up to it to really emphasise how we're going to deal with what they're going to bring to the table. But like always, it's about what we do as well as a team. The opposition bring a certain element to it, and you have to be mindful of that and really, really respectful in Sydney's case. So, but it's about what we do as a team and how we bring our game as well. So I'm looking forward to a really, really tough game, a really strong game against them, and hopefully we can get a good performance and perform to our levels where we can hopefully get the much needed points we need.
Just speaking broadly, Mark, you're 20 or so games in now. Do you have a sort of a top line thought or opinion on the style of management that that works in the A-League, where it seems the man that you're sort of trading first place with at the moment, Giancarlo Italiano at Wellington, he's spoken about how he's not particularly dogmatic and how flexibility when he's playing home or away or against a particular opposition is sort of winning the day for him. And the days of Ange Postecoglou and Graham Arnold, who were so strident in the way that they want to play and had success with, do seem a little bit behind us. You've also been very flexible. You set up with a back five against Melbourne Victory a couple of weeks ago when you'd played a midweek game and your resources were a little bit stretched. Do you have any particular strong feelings on the style of management that that is sort of, with where the league is at in terms of management?
Yeah, well, we've come up against, I've had some real intriguing challenges, or we have as a club against managers in the league. And you talk about that flexibility of teams, and I think that's the modern game now. The game's evolving all the time, and managers are evolving, and formations are evolving. What we look at is, how we've got different phases of our game, of how we work out a possession, how we work out a possession when the goalkeeper's got the ball, when they have the ball in the middle of the park, when they have the ball in our attacking third. We've got all certain types of structures in how we want to set up. And then with the ball, when we have it, we can build in different ways. We can switch to a back three. We can go to a back five. We can be a back four. And I think that tactical adaptability is vital in the modern game. And it's vital in the A-League, because now you're seeing managers who have an awareness and can execute that really, really well. So I think, you're seeing these tactical battles now between the managers and the teams. It's not about physicality. It's about, the shape of the team and how you deal with certain scenarios. And, like you said about the Wellington team, how they adapt to certain situations. And that's needed in the game of football. I think if you're just single-minded and play a certain way, then you can get found out. So having that capability of changing and switching things up, not game by game, but also in-game as well, is vital. And I've seen that a lot, particularly the teams who we've been playing near the top of the table as well. I've seen that adaptability a lot, and it keeps you on your toes. You have to be prepared to adapt quickly. You have to be prepared to switch in a different way. But again, I'll always go back to, we're always aware of what the opposition do. We always try and preset things and predict things of what they might do, but you've got to be prepared for the unexpected as well, and be able to think on your feet. And I think if as long as you prepare on and believe in what you're doing, we don't talk so much about formations, but we talk about behaviours within that and certain ways of how we want to behave on the pitch in individual battles and controlling space and creating time. And it's that's how we want to approach the game. But the league in general is becoming more tactical, in my view, and we're getting challenges every week and analysing teams. It's getting more and more difficult to do.
Well, Jacko, it's been great chatting to you. We clearly can tell that you're enjoying your time in Australia and the different aspects of football that the opportunity brings to you. It's going to be a battle royale to the end of the season against another debutant in the A-League, but a very different debutant in the gaffer at the Wellington Phoenix. We wish you luck as the season comes to the real pointy end, and we hope to have you back on again for a yarn as it wraps up over the coming months.
No, that'd be great. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and I'll look forward to the next one.
Mark Jacko Jackson, the gaffer down at the Central Coast Mariners, doing an excellent job since he's arrived. And who would have thought that after the unexpected championship that they managed to get hold of last A-League season, that they'd be vying for the title and more than that, multiple silverware opportunities over the course of this season. Okay, stick around. After the break, we are going to flip over to the other side of the world. Jordan Campbell, we're always watching the Scottish Premiership with such a strong Australian interest, but it's been a while since we talked to Jordan, since Ange Postecoglou left Celtic. Be interesting to have a yarn to him about what's happening in the Scottish Premiership, the lead up to the Euros, Scotland's expectations for that tournament, which is less than 100 days away. That's next on Box to Box. That's the tune, Willem. How does it go?
That's the one. Hoo-hoo.
That's it. Oh, give it to me again, please.
Hoo-hoo.
That's better. Yeah. Now, I had a very active weekend. I was telling you and Adam off air. Adam, our fantastic producer, who, well, we've got to get him behind the mic. He's a mad Arsenal man as well, don't we, one day, Willem? But I'm a little bit older than you guys, so I went for a run, the run for the kids in Melbourne for the Children's Hospital. I was talking about that last week for Chemist Warehouse. Played about 27 holes of golf and did a boxing session. And when you do that in your late 50s, as I am, you need bone strength, don't you, Willem?
You do, indeed, always, at all stages of life.
Yeah, that is true. But, well, to support your bone strength from within, try Ostalin Cal DK2 from Chemist Warehouse. It's got the calcium, vitamin D3 and K2 in one convenient daily tablet to support muscle function and maintain bone density. So if you've got someone who's, you know, tracking over 50 in their life, a little bit older even, and they do need to get that bone density at a level that's going to keep them fit and healthy as they get older, get a hold of this. Support your bone strength with Australia's number one bone health brand, Ostalin Cal DK2, 60 tablets from Chemist Warehouse. Anyone in your life, Willem, that you might be referring that to?
Yeah, there's some people in my life that are nearing their late 50s, Rob, although they have been listening to this podcast because I think they miss me, my parents. So I won't disclose any further, but no, bone density, very important, at all, as I say, all ages.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Van Denderen, your wonderful son, is always concerned about your health, so get a hold of some of this. Always read the label and follow the directions for use. It comes from the IQVIA Retail Scan Sales Data, Total Australia, MAT, 10 February 2024. That's the data that it's Australia's number one product, of course. Chemist Warehouse, the great savings are every single day. Chemist Warehouse, why pay
more? Box to Box.
Can you believe?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. Now, I know I mentioned off the top of the show that the Scottish Premiership reached peak interest in Australia when Ange Postecoglou was at Celtic. And yeah, we've taken our eye off that league for a little while, but with such Australian interest, particularly right now with the Australians in a World Cup qualifying window against Lebanon in a couple of days and some of those key players travelling back from the Scottish Premiership, but obviously gets back on the agenda. And of course, we're just interested in the competition for what it is. And then the Euros aren't far away and Scotland's got big hopes. And a man who was fantastic for us during Ange's time at Celtic was our next guest, the Athletic's Jordan Campbell. Welcome back to Box, Jordan.
No, thanks for having me. I think every time I come back, I'm at the rival team of Ange. So last time it was Rangers when he was at Celtic, and now I'm covering Arsenal when he's at Spurs. So yeah, I think I'm following him around as his arch nemesis.
Well, we did notice that, and Derek, who's going to start asking you a couple of questions, I am a little concerned that he might just pivot the whole thing off and start talking about Arsenal. If you look closely, if he turns in the right direction, you might see a couple of Arsenal jumpers behind him, mate. But hey, before we get going into the Scottish competition as such, the Australian interest, obviously, we've got several of the boys applying their trade in Scotland, in Australia right now, about to play that World Cup qualifier. One I wanted to ask you in particular about was Kai Rowles. He hit the ground running straight out of that contract that he signed, but has had some tough times. But Hearts are now third, and it's, you know, as close as you generally see in the Scottish Premiership to the top two spots, and he's been a really important player. So tell us about what the resurgence has looked like for him at Hearts, and what you think he might bring to Australia in this important tie.
Yeah, Hearts recovery this season has been pretty remarkable. Before Christmas, it was looking very ropey for Stephen Naismith, the manager. Obviously, in his first managerial job, learning how to manage a squad. He hadn't quite got his pro license yet to be able to be on the touchline, which caused a few problems when they were in Europe. But the last 3-4 months, they've produced unbelievable form. You know, they're not actually too far off Rangers and Celtic. You know, and I think to carve themselves out as clearly the third best team in Scotland has been a great season for Hearts. There's always that competition between Aberdeen and Hibs, and one of those three teams, two of those three teams, always seem to be, you know, slightly in disarray or on the verge of a crisis. But Hearts seem to be really building, and I know Joe Savage well, who's the sporting director there, and you know, one of the big things for him has been getting players like Kai, you know, right under contract for the next 4 or 5 years and making sure that they secure them as an asset. But also in Scotland, there's so much turnover all the time because there's not huge budget. So you tend to see one or two years at most, and then you get a completely new team coming in and there's no stability. Whereas with this Hearts team, you're actually able to see that if you look through it, they've all been there at least 2-3 years now. And I think you're starting to see that in the football. They've got some other players that bring me back. But no, I think Rowles is shown that he's a very good defender. Hearts gone switched from a back four to a back three, and I think he can show that he shows that he's adaptable and can play off that left side or tuck in when needed as well. So I think he's a flexible option. And the volume of games in Scotland, I think, probably helps will help stand them in good stead, especially their physicality as well, because that can take some time for some of the Australian players to adapt. But I think Hearts have been convinced that is now a good option for them, and it's a good market for them, and I think they'll keep dipping in there when the right opportunities come.
And of course, there's the likes of Nectar Triantis, Ryan McGowan, Teddy Yenge, Hakemi Devlin, but two other players that are in that Australian squad, Nathaniel Atkinson at Hibs and Keanu Backus at St Mirren, two competitive sides. Atkinson came on as a late sub on the weekend before travelling to Australia, and then and Backus wasn't used. I mean, what do you make of those two and their form in the Scottish Premiership?
Yeah, I mean, Backus has been a player for a couple of years that has attracted big clubs. I was surprised that he never got a big move because his ability in the middle of the park can do a bit of everything. But a box-to-box player, he stood out, especially last season or the season before that. But yeah, he's maybe not quite kicked on, but against St Mirren, have had a very good season. So yeah, I think he's a player that has definitely got a higher ceiling. I think if you look at where he can probably go to, I think probably a championship team in England's the likely next step for him. He's still young enough to make that move. Atkinson, obviously, you know, good attacking player, can get up and down the wing. So I think he's shown his quality, maybe not played as often. But yeah, I think when you look at what Hearts have done grouping them together, there's definitely a trend in Scotland where other teams are looking at, you know, dipping into markets in Japan and Australia, you know, looking a bit further afield, because so much of the recruitment has always been focused on England, that I think you're starting to see that these players do have market value and they can be brought in for a low sum and then hopefully turned around. But yeah, Backus is someone that I think is definitely one to watch over the next couple of years, because, you know, he's very, very good on the ball and breaks up play really, really well. But the thing in Scotland as well is that if you have that athletic profile that you can get around and you can play 1v1, then I think you stand out as in the top percentile of the league. So I think outside the Old Firm, he's definitely up there in terms of one of the strongest players there's been the last couple of years.
And one player that's been critical to Australia when he's been fit, but he's been so injury prone, Martin Boyle. That was a terrible head knock he had, ironically, against the brother of one of his Socceroos teammates, John Souter, Harry's younger brother, who of course represents Scotland. He seems to have bounced back well. Typically his injuries tend to be soft tissues and bones and so on. This is the first time we've seen him cop a head knock like this, but it looked really ugly for a while there.
Oh no, it was one of those that makes you flinch when you see it live. It looked a bit innocuous at the time, and you know, because it was quite a feisty game, it always is with Hibs and Rangers, especially at Easter Road. It was one of those you weren't sure whether it was, you know, buying a little bit of time. But then when you saw the replay, you thought, well, this looks really, really bad. I don't think there was any malice in it. You know, John Souttar's not a player who is known for that sort of behaviour. So I think it was just an unfortunate coming together because his eyes were on the ball. But yeah, I think the concussions nowadays, that there can't be any risk taken. And it was good to see him sort of sat out the next game. And now he's obviously able to come back in. But I think you can't take any risk with those, especially when it's such a high impact injury. So yeah, it's great to see him obviously back. But I mean, Boyle's a talisman at Hibs. He has been, even when before he left to then rejoin again. I think he's a great player. Another one that I'm surprised Celtic or Rangers didn't go for a couple of years ago. Bit more difficult now, as you say, with his injuries, and he's a little bit older as well. There's not much resale value, but I mean, I think he's a great player in terms of direct runners in the league. He's got to be up there as one of the best forwards in the league. So, yeah, it's good to see him back fit. And, yeah, I'm just glad it wasn't anything more serious.
Jordan, if we can get you to put your Rangers hat back on and just looking at what happened this weekend or what didn't happen this weekend. Celtic obviously got their job done 3-1 and returned to the top of SPL. Rangers didn't get that opportunity because of a waterlogged pitch, I believe, at Dundee. How significant do you think that could be just in case, in terms of the loss of momentum, the fact that they're going to have this game in hand now? I don't know how soon they'll be able to resolve this game in hand, but in a way, they've, with it, through no fault of their own, they've seceded a little bit of momentum to Celtic. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a psychological thing because you've still got the game in hand to go top when they play it, but it's that psychology of going into the break top. You know, it's not something that Rangers have had the last 2, 3, 4 years. It actually reminds me of Angie's first season in Scotland, where there was an Old Firm game before the winter break. Celtic had a complete crisis, injury crisis, were missing so many key players, and it ended up getting postponed and delayed until the winter break, by which time Celtic had so many players back that they ended up winning, and then that just saw Angie's team just fly. So I think these momentum shifts in Scotland can be very, very important. It can only take one result or one delayed game to really swing things. So I think it is a bit frustrating for Rangers because even though they looked really, really tired the last 2 or 3 games, especially in Europe, I think the mindset would have been, let's get through this last game, get a victory, and then we can recover. Whereas now you're thinking that's another game now in that last stretch of the season. It should take place before the Celtic game. And if Rangers do the job properly, they should go into that game at home at Ibrox with a couple of points advantage. But there's that nagging doubt when you look at Rangers and players like Lundstrom, Diomande, who have been asked to play literally every minute, every game in the last couple of months. You're looking at them thinking, I don't know how many competitions they can realistically fight on. So the fact that they fell against Benfica, albeit a narrow margin, I think when people get past the disappointment, you probably look at it and think this squad was never ready to really compete for 3-4 trophies. You know, 6 months ago, it was a write-off of a season, and now you're disappointed that there's not a quadruple. So I think that's what Phil Clement has done to expectations. But I think for the last couple of months, the focus is just on the league and the Scottish Cup and getting over the line in those two, because, as I say, it looked doom and gloom 4 or 5 months ago.
Can you tell us about the job that Clement has done? He came into Rangers with, really, unless you were a ardent European football aficionado, you wouldn't have heard of him. He a few eyebrows raised when he came into Rangers, but he's obviously done a sensational job to not only just put Rangers back into the kind of territory and that Celtic were operating in, but challenging them and actually moving ahead of them. What is it that he's done? It's not players, is it? Because he's always, you know, all Rangers managers have to work on this shoestring or tight budget. So what is it is he actually done that has just made the difference this season?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to man management, because what you've seen with Michael Beale is that you can be as revered a coach as you like and the players can think your sessions are great, but there's a big difference between being a number two and a number one. And I think Phil Clement has just brought, you speak to people around the club and they say he's brought back that presence and the standards that are expected at a club like Rangers. And I don't think they've really had that figure ever since Gerrard left. You know, Van Bronckhorst had a great career as a player and obviously was respected for that, but he wasn't a disciplinarian. He wasn't someone that had a fear factor about him, and I think that ultimately cost him at Rangers. So I think Phil Clement has brought back a sort of blend of the coaching ability and the flexibility that you need to grind out results in Scotland, but then he's also brought back that man management. I told he's really big on one-on-one meetings, so takes the players out a lot of times, and speaks to them individually, gives them a plan as to how he sees them fitting into his plans. But I actually don't think you'll see a lot of this squad here in the summer, which says a lot for how adaptable he is and getting the most out of the squad that's available to him. He's only been able to add three players in the January window. But that again, it looks to be a much better window than Rangers have had the last couple of years. And that's to do with Niels Kuppen coming in from Holland, where he was head of recruitment there at PSV. So I think they've signed Silva, they've signed Cortez, they've signed Diomande. They all look quality players. Obviously, Cortez suffered an injury, which was a bit of a blow because he looked like he'd really upped the level for Rangers in terms of the left-wing position. But yeah, I think something I get told, which sort of sums up Clement and his no-nonsense approach, is that the presentation video they showed to players before he came in was really quite long, and the presentations were, you know, not that they weren't good, but it took a lot longer to get through it, and it was really all-encompassing, maybe 20, 30 slides. He just cut it down to like three or four. I was like, this is it. This is what my plan is, and just gets to the point very, very quickly. So yeah, as you say, he's not someone who's well-known outside of the UK before he arrived, but he did win three Belgian titles in a row with two different clubs. So this is a guy who clearly was well-respected in Europe. Monaco obviously took him as well. So you don't get that level of job unless you're a top manager. And I think Rangers, a bit like with Ange and Celtic fans, are thinking, if this guy's not here in a year or two's time, well, there's a reason, and it's because he's done a good job. So I don't think Rangers fans will mind it if he's not here for the long haul, as long as he brings immediate success, which he obviously did with the League Cup. I think now Rangers want to actually have a season where they can say we've won a double or a treble, because that's eluded them in the past 4 or 5 years. They've never been able to get over the line, but there feels to be a different mentality under Clement. So I think there's a lot of confidence the last 2 months that when it comes to the big games, that he will be able to get them over the line this time.
Well, they've got the Viaplay Cup in the bag for that treble. I believe that them and Rangers have been separated in the semi-finals of the Cup, so it will be a old firm encounter potentially for the final. But in the league, they're so close together. I believe the goal difference is the same at the moment, albeit Rangers win that game in hand, they'll have a better goal difference. Is it literally going to come down to the fixtures between the two clubs? Do you think they can just lock out all of their other games because they'll be so sharp and focused, both teams? And is it really what's going to be happening at Ibrox that'll decide where this is going to go?
I wouldn't be surprised if it comes down to the last game. We obviously had a couple of famous helicopter Sundays, as they're called in Scotland, where it went down to the final day. There was the famous one with Mikel Arteta's last-minute penalty winner in 2003. So, to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me because the league is not strong. You know, Rangers and Celtic are still on course to finish on over 90 points this season. And I don't think that's because either team are really great. I think if you ask the fans, they wouldn't say that this is a stellar team that's going to be remembered in 20 years' time as one of the best. But I think it shows the gulf. Even you look at Hearts, I don't think Hearts are anywhere near Rangers and Celtic, and they're clearly the third best team. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Rangers and Celtic almost go parallel until the end of the season, and it does come down to those last two games, which there's less jeopardy to those games as well because the away fans aren't there now. So if you look at the record, since the away fans were basically locked out, home teams tend to win the vast majority of times because the atmosphere's just changed, and it's still intense, but it's a different kind of intimidating now where you've not really got that vocal backing if you're on the away side. So I think that game at Ibrox is going to be massive because, as we say, if Rangers win that game in hand against Dundee and go into it a couple of points ahead, they've got the chance to really open up a little bit of a gap there. But they need players back really, really quickly because they do look like they're leggy and they're really lacking in the forward areas.
Before we let you go, that's a thorough analysis on the Scottish Premiership, but the Euros are less than 100 days away. Steve Clarke has got huge expectations, but it's going to be a really tricky group. Germany first up to open the tournament, Hungary and Switzerland. What are your expectations as an observer? Scotland, you know, they flatter to deceive at some stages and happy with nearly results like the Euros last time around against England, but couldn't get out of the group. So what's your sense of how they'll go in Germany?
Well, I mean, I think for Scotland to be in the opening game against the hosts is quite nice because it sort of takes the pressure off of that game against Germany. We nearly caused an upset against Brazil in 98, so I think there's some optimism that Scotland can maybe, you know, cause a surprise, or even if that game they go on to lose it, which is expected, I think the manner in which they do it will really set the tone, because in the Euro 2020, Scotland really disappointed. I think there was a lot of optimism with two home games at Hampden that they would come flying out the traps and really get the crowd behind them, but it was a weird experience because it was a half full ground because of COVID restrictions. So I think to have the Tartan Army travelling in Europe again is something that European fans will quite enjoy because, you know, they're renowned for their support and the colour that they add to the tournament. So I think that will help them. But I think the experience of being in that tournament and having so many of the squad being in their mid-20s, you look at McTominay, McGinn, Robertson, Tierney, even Gilmore, these players have all grown together the last 4 or 5 years. You look at the caps when they came in, when Steve Clarke arrived in 2019, it was 4, 5, 0, 10. There was no one who had really got over 50. And now you look at the core of that squad and you've got, I think, 5 or 6 players now on 40, 50 caps. So they've all experienced it together. And I think they're now coming into their peak years. So I hope that they've learned a lot from that tournament and Clarke has as well, because they were great at Wembley against England, but the other two home games against Czech Republic and Croatia, it felt like they were sort of stuck between going for it and sitting back. They played a little bit too tentatively and went forward a little bit too quickly. Everything was quite rushed. So I think now that they've got a settled team, they've had that for a couple of years with Hickey coming in at right back. They've managed to solve the Tierney and Robertson equation to fit the two of them into defence. I think we still lack a top striker because we've got Adams and there's Lyndon Dykes. I think if they could convince... if they could convince someone else to potentially join, switch allegiances for England, like, you know, like Harvey at Leicester. He's not Leicester now, Newcastle, sorry. That would be a big bonus because it would just add that extra dimension that they don't have up top. But I think Scotland need to be brave because I think Hungary and Switzerland are good sides, but they're not elite sides that Scotland don't stand a chance against. But my only concern with Hungary is that they'll probably look to play in a similar way to Scotland in terms of giving up the ball and playing on the counter. So it depends on how Scotland deal with actually being the aggressors in the game. They've got the players to do it. You look at the midfielders they've got with Gilmore and McGregor. They've got playmakers who can go and take the game by the scruff of the neck. It's just about actually convincing them that they can go and dominate a game in a European tournament, and they don't have to sit off and they don't have to be the reactive team. I think that's the mentality change that the squad need.
Well, Jordan, comprehensive as always, mate. We will get you on closer if we can to have a yarn about the Euros once we're in the shadows of that tournament. By that stage, the Scottish Premiership will be done and dusted, and you know, we'll be. I know Derek. At the very least, will be one person who's watching Scotland's travails with interest, mate. And he hasn't even managed to get a question in about Arsenal in this whole conversation. So, well done him.
No, thanks for having me on, mate. Anytime.
Not at all, Jordan Campbell from The Athletic. Stick around. World Cup corner next on Box to Box.
Willa, willa, willa. Everybody's going to buy Hoyts spices.
Yeah, aren't they, Willem? You can't get them over there in the Netherlands. I'm sure you're missing it. But, I mean, we're always talking about flavour pack meals. It's usually on me. But this week, you've taken up the responsibility of a recipe with some Hoyts ingredients. Give it to us.
Not so much a recipe, but a concept, Rob. Willa, willa, willa. A term for you in Dutch, vrietag. It's when you've had a feed, kick back on your chair. And I know that we're going to do this when the five of us are in Melbourne and you take us to the Flower Drum. But in the meantime, you can do it every night with your Hoyts Herbs and Spices packed meals. It's when you lean back on your chair and you open up your belt or your button and just make a little bit of extra room and recline at the end of a long day, satisfied with a flavour packed meal and just open up that little bit of extra space in the pants.
Well, you know, I was talking about the Olive Tree restaurant with Johnny Yacardo from Hoyts and Zlati and Sam the other week. We went to the Olive Tree and had a massive feed. Anyone who listened to that show will remember. I actually did take my belt off that day. So what's that word again?
Vritarg.
I had a bit of Vritarg going, and it was good because you just feel, no one wants a tight belly, especially when you've had a meal packed with Hoyts flavour. If you haven't done it yet, try it out. Get along to your local Coles or Woolworths, your good independent supermarket. Easter's coming up, so you might want to hop in there and load up those empty spice jars, will you?
Absolutely. Sounds good to me, Rob.
Fill those empties with Hoyts spices,
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyts Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yeah, this is Box to Box. If you didn't know what was going on in Scotland, you sure do now. Jordan Campbell, what an expert and a great bloke he is. Now, we usually reserve this part of the show for what's going on in World Cup events, big events of a similar ilk. But we also reserve it to talk about similar big events that are going on in the world of football outside of World Cups, Olympic qualifying and so on. And Derek's brought to the table this week the team that he has a love-hate relationship with. Which is it going to be this week, Derek? Love or hate?
Yes, I don't know if it's love or hate, Rob. I do want to talk about England as they go into the next round of fixtures. They've got some marquee games coming up against Brazil and Belgium, so he can't accuse them of putting up some cannon fodder for this latest round of international friendlies. And of course, Gareth Southgate fine-tuning this side leading into the upcoming Euros. Of course, we heard a bit from Jordan Campbell earlier talking about mighting Scotland, but worth reflecting on England too. And I've wanted to talk about this for a few weeks, actually, just looking at the quality of this England team that's shaping up. It really is going to be an outstanding collection of footballers that Gareth Southgate takes into that tournament. When we think about it, they're going to have Harry Kane up front. They're going to have Bukayo Saka on the right cutting in. They're going to have Phil Foden, we think, has now cemented his place on the left. So that's the front three. And then in midfield, you're going to have Jude Bellingham bombing forward from a central position to join them as a four. I mean, that's frightening. He's the informed player in European football at the moment. You're going to have Declan Rice, of course. He's having a fantastic season for Arsenal. And then it's just a question of who is going to play next to Rice. We know that Gareth Southgate loves a double pivot. He's favoured Calvin Phillips there, but he's woefully out of form at the moment at West Ham. Jordan Henderson, much maligned, turning into a bit of a comedy figure really over in Ajax. Ajax had a poor game at the weekend and he had to put on the spot by a journo and didn't come across too well. He bristled at some of the criticism. But look, whoever they put in there, Cole Palmer, we mentioned or we're going to mention in stoppage time, what a season he's having. He's quite attacking, but could he be a box-to-box solution in the middle? The Mainoo at Manchester United is possibly a bit young, but what a player he is. And of course, at the back, they've still got Jordan Pickford, Kyle Walker, Harry Maguire, of course, will play with John Stones. John Stones could play in midfield as well, but I feel like they'll need him at the back next to old Slabhead. I don't know who they're going to play at left back, but I'm sure they must have a million options. I haven't even mentioned your man over at Liverpool, Rob Alexander-Arnold. Could he play in midfield alongside Declan Rice? What a midfield. What a dynamic, vibrant midfield that could possibly be. So, look, I'm sounding a bit excited because I actually genuinely want to see how this team does and what Gareth Southgate does with it. They spoke about a golden era that Sven-Goran Eriksson had with the Beckhams and the Lampards and the Terrys and the Rooneys, etc. But this is a fantastic team and they must go into the tournament as a red-hot favourite despite England's doing their best over the years at throwing away these talented squads that they have.
So Trent Alexander-Arnold, as much as I'd love to think he's going to get a lot of minutes, he doesn't seem to be a favourite of Gareth Southgate. But one player that is missing from that squad, which puzzled me, I was wondering if you are able to shed a little bit more light on it, is Ben White. He left Qatar early. We never found out why that happened. The only scuttlebutt we hear is that he doesn't see eye to eye with one of Gareth Southgate's assistant coaches. What do you make of all that? I mean, he's a guy that could potentially be in an iconic side. I mean, you go back to 1966. These were men who won a title that had them on the pedestal for the rest of their lives. He's walking away from an opportunity. Why is that?
It's a really interesting question. Of course, Ben White is in absolutely fantastic form for Arsenal this season. He's not just been made that right back position his own. He came to Arsenal as a £50 million central defender, but he's making the right back position his own. He's very solid there, but he does join play and he is now getting involved in the assists. He even scored a goal at Sheffield United the other week. And yes, you're right. In Qatar, he did fall out with Steve Round about how information is passed on to him, how he's taking on that information. And it just doesn't sound like they get on, and it's really festered. Now, for England, it's, you know, you can argue this isn't the biggest calamity because they do have Kyle Walker at right back. They do have Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back as well. They have a few different options there, but White is a versatile player. He can play right back, he can play centre back. You could even push him into midfield alongside Declan Rice, or you could put him in centre back with Harry Maguire and allow John Stones to go into central midfield. So I think Gareth Southgate will be frustrated. And look, there's obviously something pretty bad has happened, or it is just part of this, you know, the changing attitude towards international football for some players that their club careers are more important. Incidentally, Ben White doesn't even like football. I don't know where that fits in, but apparently he doesn't watch football outside of football. He just goes home and he focuses on completely other stuff. And there are those players out there that just don't like football, but it just happens to be their job. So maybe the allure of playing in England in international tournaments doesn't really bother him. His employer's Arsenal. He's been well paid there. He's in a great setup and in a great place. But look, it is strange because you'd think that if you had any ambition in the game, you would make those, you would make concessions, or you would find a way to make those things work. You know, Jordan Henderson left Saudi Arabia partly because he wanted to preserve his England career, I'm sure, despite the riches he was being paid. So yeah, it's very strange. Good for Arsenal though, because he can just put his feet up and, well, he won't be watching the football, he'll be watching something else. He won't be getting injured, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, you know, weird to us, but, you know, obviously perfectly understandable to him if he's got a bloke he can't stand, who he's got to spend a lot of time with, and he's got to spend a lot of time on the bench and not playing the game he, well, doesn't seem to like that much. But in all seriousness, if he's not a starting squad guaranteed player, then maybe, you know, it's an argument that some players are prepared to stand or fall on, and but then ultimately they're the ones that are going to suffer down the track if they choose to stand on their dudgeon. All right, mate, we better wrap it up there. Derek, Willem, I should say, did you have anything to add before we wrap it up, mate?
No, just that it's been a pleasure as always, Rob. Great show. See you on Wednesday for Stoppage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a great edition of Stoppage Time. We're going to sink our teeth into FA Cup fifth round, when some juicy games there Derek referred to already, and I know I've got a little favourite team of the week. The Cedars of Lebanon is mine, Derek, but why don't we leave it till we resume for Stoppage Time in a few days' time.
Thanks, Rob. Looking forward to the movie reference as well. Stay tuned.
I've got a good one. Adam Maloney, thank you, mate. You've been a tower of authority sitting there behind that virtual glass, making sure this show comes together and our listeners get to listen to it every week when it does drop. Thank you, my friend, and to all of our listeners. If you haven't already, please make sure you subscribe to Box, Stoppage Time and Offside, wherever you get your podcast. Tweet us at Box NTS and follow us on X. Make sure you like us on Facebook and join us throughout the week as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.